Welcome to Women Waken, a podcast that helps you heal spiritually from trauma in relationships, childhood, and early life conditioning to shift from a place of codependency into a divine feminine state of love, harmony, abundance, and joy. On Women Waken, we begin the journey to waken from the illusion of needing to prove our worth into the divine experience of knowing our worth. I'm your host, Whitney Walker. I'm a licensed mental health therapist, and I specialize in substance abuse, addiction, eating disorders, trauma, and spirituality. I'm also a fellow human being who has experienced most of the issues that I explore on this show. On today's Identify and Heal solo episode, we're moving right on into the seventh sword of self-entrapment, almost completing the series of the eight swords of self-entrapment, where I explore different ways that we hold ourselves back from truly expressing ourselves and reaching our goals and our desires in this lifetime. The seventh sword is the sword of self-criticism. And it differs from the sword of self-doubt, because for me, self-criticism is when we're really our own worst enemy, and when we're acting mean and unkind to ourselves, which is something to look at and ask ourselves, is this really helping me to get towards my goal? Is this what's going to get me where I want in life? So let's get into it. Let's explore. So take a listen and enjoy. Hey, everybody. Whitney here with an Identify and Heal solo episode. And we are moving into the seventh sword of the eight swords of self-entrapment. We're almost completing this series. How do you all like it? What do you all think? I have some other ideas brewing about other series I'd like to do, but I'm just wondering, are you all digging it? Are you like, okay, can we wrap this up now? Is it helpful? I'm just curious. And it is kind of fun because it helps me to have ideas for episodes, because I do have to keep coming up with ideas, which again, I'm always open to your feedback. If you want to email me or message me on Instagram, if there's something that you'd love for me to address or talk about. With that said, let's get into the seventh sword of self-entrapment, which is self-criticism. And I wanted to include this, even though I already did the sword of self-doubt and fear of judgment, which, you know, everything kind of goes hand in hand with really just not being able to feel like we can accept who we are, embrace who we are, love who we are, own who we are, let ourselves really shine, step into our power. But they each have different facets, right? Like a diamond. They each kind of are a different angle of how that expresses itself and, for the series, how it holds us back. So why is self-criticism one of the eight swords? When I think of self-doubt versus self-criticism, self-doubt to me is Eeyore. I think I said that in the episode, but it's that part of us that's just like, wah, wah, like, oh, I knew it. I was never going to get that job. No one's ever going to take me seriously. I'm never going to find that person. Just that sort of downtrodden, self-defeating attitude where we just kind of always expect to not get what we want, to not be considered in high regard, to not be worthy, right, is what self-doubt and doubting our worth is all about. That's what that sword was. I believe it was the first sword that I did. Self-criticism, rather than being like Eeyore, is more like the evil villain of our story, right? It's that voice in our head that says, do you really think that you can do that? Do you really think that you are good enough for that person? Who are you kidding? It's that mean voice. It's mean. It's unkind. It's like a snake. It's a snake in our ear. What's a mean snake character? The first one that comes to mind is the one from the cartoon Robin Hood. That snake was just kind of a pest. He wasn't really mean, but you know, that sneaky snake that just sounds weird when I say that just wants to whisper these like unnecessary things, right? Very rude, very evil, very unkind things. And yet we can live with that and swim in that so frequently if we don't stop to look at it and to address it and to see it and say, excuse me, snake, do you mind? Could you not be bringing that negativity into my realm? Could you not be so rude? How about yes? I absolutely can take this opportunity. I am absolutely worthy of this opportunity. I am absolutely of value, and anybody would be so lucky to be my friend, to be my companion, to work with me. Goodbye, snake. Slither on. Yet, you know, it takes effort, right? It takes us being able to know when that voice comes up, to hear it, to identify it, and grab it, grab that snake by its neck and say, go on. You don't have to grab him. Again, just tell him to slither on. We don't want to hurt the guy. He means well, because here's the thing, and I want to offer this. This ties in particularly when I specialize in eating disorders, as you all know, in my work as a therapist. And specifically when I work with people who are suffering with anorexia, which is an eating disorder. It's a disorder where people are afraid of food, essentially. They're deeply afraid of gaining weight, of caloric intake. It's the more research they do, it's a very complex disorder. I know a lot about it because you all have probably heard me speak several times that my mom suffers from this and has from before I was born and throughout my whole life. She's one of those that could just never quite break free of it. And she's made it work in terms of she's alive, she's healthy, but she still is contained. She's bound by this. I mean, talk about self-entrapment. It's a pretty horrendous affliction. And my heart goes out to all those who are struggling with it. It's actually the most lethal of all mental illnesses. And when she would describe it, this is what it sounded like, this really mean hissing voice. And actually, there's a book, which I somewhat am reluctant to share, but I don't believe in hiding things. But there's a book called Wasted by Maria Hornbacher. And it's a controversial book because it's an exceptionally profound and eye-opening account of an eating disorder and anorexia. However, many people have said that it almost taught them how to have an eating disorder. So there's that controversy around that. I read it when I was in high school, when I was in the depths of bulimia and binging, restricting, all of that. And yes, it kind of offers things, but in my opinion, it didn't tell me anything I didn't already know or I wasn't figuring out. And I also believe that you can't tell somebody something that's going to make them do what they wouldn't have already done. I don't think anybody could read that book and decide, oh, great, now that I know, I'm going to do that. I think that anyone who would take any of her expressed means of being in an eating disorder would have already found their way to it. And that's just my line of thought. I'm not big on book banning. I just don't believe in that. You know, if we don't want to engage with it, we don't have to look at it. But I don't think that we're meant to hide any information, no matter what it is. Just my train of thought, just my take. Anyways, she describes this as well. She describes anorexia as like this, and it's hissing. It's like there's something about it. It's because it's sharp, right? It's mean. It's biting. And she said it was like this woman in her ear that was like, are you really going to eat that? Have you looked at your thighs today? Just this cruel, almost like that evil stepmother that just criticizes everything we do. So I bring up this because I think that anyone who's experienced anorexia knows like that you're at self-criticism times 1,000, times 1,000,000. It's brutal. And again, my heart goes out to you, and I'm going to put a resource in the show notes for this episode for eating disorders. The EDRC, Eating Disorder Resource Center, which is based in Campbell, California, yet has an online database that's so helpful, a beautiful organization that I volunteer for. Yet, let's pull it back. You don't have to be struggling with anorexia to know that self-criticism and why it holds you back. And here is why. It really is this naysayer that's following you around throughout your day. And this is my bigger point of bringing up the part of anorexia. When I work with my clients, I tell them, and anyone who's done IFS, internal family systems, this will be familiar to you. Believe it or not, that mechanism of anorexia is your protector, which is one of the components of IFS. It is trying to keep you from being hurt in the most fucked up way, right? Which, hey, who doesn't have fucked up coping mechanisms? It's called addiction. It's called disorders. It's called not knowing how to regulate our emotions. So we look to do it in other ways that sound crazy, yet when we feel we have no other options, it's what we're going to turn to. So when we're suffering with something like anorexia, our protector is saying, you got bullied for being overweight. You're better when you're thin. So let's get you thin. Let's get you really thin so you never have to feel that pain again. Not acknowledging the pain of being that strict on yourself, being that regimented, being that tied to perfectionism. In the protector's mind, that's winning. It's winning to be as thin and perfect as possible. And I know I've had that voice. Again, you don't have an eating disorder, even if you're just very meticulous in particular about how you look, how you show up in the world. Anything that's out of place can feel like, oh, no, that's wrong. I'm bad. I'm not good enough. That, like a drill sergeant, you know? Okay, that was pretty good, but not good enough. That's the self-criticism in our voice that can be so grueling and brutal. But again, it's at its nature, at its essence, like I was saying, bringing up anorexia, it's trying to protect us from the pain it experienced. It's trying to get us the approval that we think will cease all pain. Yet when we realize that that is not true, because as I've spoken too often in this show, there is no amount of external achievement that can ever soothe the pain of feeling not enough. Because external things drop into a bottomless bucket. We can only feel the beauty of external delights when we're filled, when our bucket is filled. I like the analogy of it's, we got to have the cake, a solid, core, healthy, delicious cake. And then, that's a weird thing to say, but hear me out. And then everything else we can take is the icing, right? If we feel good about who we are and we're happy and someone comes around and says, wow, I really like you. And I was wondering, like, could I spend some time with you and maybe take you out? And we'd be like, yeah, come join the party. It's great. And it's just this nice icing. Like, isn't that sweet? Some sweet icing. But when we're so self-critical and so self-doubting, have that same scenario happen and we're going to say, oh gosh, everything is riding on this. Okay, they said they're interested. Are they going to know that I actually suck? Are they going to realize? They're going to run away. They're not going to like me. You can tell I'm kind of sharing some internal dialogue I've had in my life. So there's nothing that we can attain outside of ourselves that will ever feel something that's bottomless, ever fill that bottomless bucket. We got to make that bucket nice and sturdy and strong with a nice foundational bottom so that we're actually being nourished and satiated by what we're experiencing, what we're consuming. And of course, consumption means way beyond what we're eating or drinking. It means what we're watching, what we're listening to, the energy that we're interacting with. All of these things contribute to what we're taking in. And when we're mindful of that, and when we decide, I'm done with the fruitless pursuit of trying to fill that bucket with ephemeral things that never actually soothe my soul or make me happy. It's 222 right now. Talk about foundational bucket. I always think of 222 as like that beautiful layer of love that's accompanying us, that's joining us on our journey, that's paving our way. 222. I feel like it's big this year. And we will continue to try, however, through other means to stop that critical voice. That's another way that self-criticism is so binding, because it feels like if you just push up that mountain a little further, the criticism will stop. You'll finally be good enough. It just popped into my mind. Have you all seen the movie Black Swan? Many of you probably have. It came out about 10 years ago, and it was a powerful movie about these ballet dancers with Mila Kunis and Natalie Portman. And my mom was a dancer. That's pretty much led a lot to her development of anorexia, among other things. It's never just that. And basically the movie is about just trying to be good enough and dying to be good enough. I don't want to give away too much. Maybe I already did. Sorry. But it's this push and this push that maybe if I just do this, then my voice will shut up and maybe I'll be okay. And maybe I can stop this exhausting pursuit of perfection so that that critical voice in my head will leave me alone. But guess what? That voice is your voice. It's like a dog chasing its tail. We can't make it stop until we stop. And the only way to stop that critical voice is to shift away from believing that there's anything that can determine our value and move into that divine feminine core that knows its value and its worth always, inherently. that can find that remarkable peace and sense of serenity when you realize everything is perfect just as it is. In this moment, in this day, I am so grateful to be here for who I am. I don't need anything in place for that to be the case. When we believe that we need circumstances outside of ourselves to be a certain way in order to feel a certain way inside, we are beholden to them. We are dependent on them. And being dependent on sources outside of ourselves is exhausting. And most humans will exhaust themselves to death with that pursuit. We usually are, so too many of us die just crawling our way, trying to finally be enough. When the great irony is that we are always enough. And you are the only one who can decide to stop that chase. And so we have to start talking to that critic. We don't want to try to destroy it. I'm not a believer in burning things or trying to damn something. You can get angry at it, right? Like, can you please shut the fuck up? But just like when you're fighting with a spouse, at the end of the day, it's not, the fight's not going to resolve from the harsh words. It's going to resolve from the peaceful communication that helps us to gain greater understanding of our partner's perspective so that we can reach peaceful resolution. And granted, your critic is basically pure ego. So let's think about that. Let's look at that component. I've been reading A Course in Miracles, and that book just hones down. And I'll tell you, I took it out from the library. I got a library card and what do they even call it? I want to say rent it, but it's not renting. Checked out. I checked it out from the library and they only let me have it for a month and I had to return it. And I got through like the, it's a big ass thick book. Like I'm saying I get through much, but it is hyper focused on the ego and is just trying to express like over and over that every single challenge that humanity faces is because of our deep attachment to believing that we are our ego and that our ego has needs that need to be fed and attended to at all times. That drive in us, that voice in our head, is our ego. Because our heart does not criticize. Our soul does not criticize. It does not understand it. You have to understand that the way the divine sees you and the way the soul experiences you is in everlasting perfection. Every moment, every step, every choice, every thought is like watching this newborn baby where you think it's cute when they fart and you think it's cute when they gargle and you think it's cute when they throw up. Maybe that's not how parents always feel, but you know what I'm saying. Or like a puppy where you're like, oh my gosh, look at that. He just chewed through the electric cable. It's so cute. That's how the soul and the divine sees you. I know I speak about it a lot, but I'm going to say it again because this is where I first heard all of this and it was like music to my ears, was the book Conversations with God. If you look it up, you'll see that there's actually 9 books in the core series. Neil Donald Walsh did a whole spectrum of books around that, but there's 9 core books and they changed my life. And I'm pretty much due to go back to read them. And the first one is the foundational understandings of why we're here and what our soul is and the true nature of reality. And the rest of them will just blow your freaking mind about the nature of life and the cosmos and aliens. It's just awesome. Yet you have to remember that that critical voice is your ego and nothing else. And your ego is that which believes it, there is a struggle to survive and that everything is a fight for its life. The only thing that is fearful is your ego. Your soul has no fear, ever. What would there be to be afraid of? It knows it exists eternally. It knows that there's nothing that could ever truly harm it or end its existence. Everything is just a beautiful experience. Yet here on earth, unlike the soul, we experience pain. We experience defeat. We experience loneliness, separation. We experience a sense of being judged, of not being of worth. The soul doesn't know that. So the soul, I believe, does have compassion for our human experience, even though it's just a part of the ride that it shows. But it feels so real here. It feels so real that, oh gosh, I hope I'm good enough that people will love me. I don't want to not be loved. It's so scary because many of us have experienced not being loved. I know I have. And I spent years of my life trying to prevent that from ever happening again. And there was no way to do it. I had to love myself. I had to decide that I was more than what other people thought of me and nothing less. I had to look that ego straight in the face and say, what are you afraid of? What would be enough for you? And it's like that evil villain from a horror movie, and it says nothing. Nothing will ever be enough. You're going to have to fight your whole life to try and satisfy me and prove to me. But guess what? You never can, because nothing will ever be enough. It's literally the opposite of the soul. Everything is enough for the soul and nothing is enough for the ego. Yet we are here on earth to experience and grow deeply as a soul by learning to have to walk that balance and experience that balance of ego versus soul. Of really, it's like taming the ego. Realize that the ego works for you. By its nature, the ego is just allowing you to have the experience of being a physical body where you have to, where you do feel like a separate being, and you move and you have to feed yourself and attend to yourself. The fact that you have a self necessitates an ego. But when the ego overrides and says, but wait, if I'm me, I could have more. I could have this. I could have that. I get to choose. I get to decide who I am and what I want to be. And we can take that in a good way, or we can take it in a negative way, which is, well, then you need to do more, 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 more. That's the word of the ego. More. No, that's not enough. Not good enough. The slave driver, the drill sergeant. So we need to look at our critic. We need to look at it and say, you have no power over me. I've said this before. It's a part from The Labyrinth, the movie with David Bowie. I talk about this often, but it's just such a powerful moment where she is beholden to him. He's tantalizing her. He's seducing her with his tight leggings and his bulge in that movie, which I've also mentioned probably too often on this show. I don't know what that says about me. I think as a kid, that was like my first, like, what is going on here, David Bowie? And she looks at him and she has this moment. She says, you have no power over me. And the whole illusion breaks. The ego delights in you giving it all its power. For someone who falls into the depth of an eating disorder, we are dancing with the devil, if you want to call it that. And the devil is just conditionality. You all have heard me talk about that. I'm going to do a broader episode about my ideas, as our concept of the devil is just conditionality, and our concept of angels, heaven, the divine is unconditional. When we're dancing with our egos, when we're dancing with the devil, it's saying, all right, now, how pretty can you be? How successful can you be? How much money can you be? How much attention can you get? How much accolades? How much prestige can you get? How much, how much, how much? More, more, more. Nope, that wasn't good. You really messed that up. Ooh, why are you eating that? Oh, why did you do this? Why did you skip the gym today? Why did you do that? All in critical ways, right? From a loving perspective, it's always a question. How are you feeling today? And the ego doesn't say this. I'm not speaking from the ego. I'm speaking from more of your heart-centered place, the place that's nurturing yourself, like a beautiful, beloved child of the universe, which you are, that says, how are you feeling today? What are you needing? Does a workout sound good? Does a nice, healthy meal sound good? Do you need some time to rest? Do you need a nap? It's kind. It's thoughtful. It does not demand. It only offers. The ego will never have that tone. The ego will always be demanding or manipulating. Oh, really? You think that that's good enough? I don't know. You better go look at that picture you posted again. I don't know if you, do you really think you look good? Who are you to post that picture? I know I've had that in my mind. And that's, so this is how I talk to my critic. That comes up and I get the urge to check my picture 20 times. Anybody else out there ever done this? Look at your story 50 times and be like, do I look weird? Should I not have posted that? I mean, we all still do it to some degree. I'm not saying, and I want to state that as well. I'm not saying that we're supposed to expunge and totally get rid of these tendencies. We're still humans having a human experience, ever evolving. But when it's, the critical voice is so loud that it's just so disparaging and depleting, we'll want to look at it. So when I get those thoughts, I tell it, thank you for your concern, yet I'm no longer engaging in those sort of harmful, hurtful, critical thoughts. I'm releasing them. I'm moving out of fear. I'm releasing fear-based beliefs, fear-based thoughts. So you can let that train just ride right on. All right, everybody. I hope that was helpful. I hope you have a beautiful weekend or rest of the day whenever you might listen to this. Take good care. That wraps up our episode for today. Thank you so much for listening to Women Waken. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with others and come back for more. If you'd like to connect with the Women Waken community, you can find us on Instagram at Women Waken. And if you follow Women Waken, you can get a free tarot card reading if you just send a DM. I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day, and don't forget to let your unique light shine into this world.